Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Did You Know? I'm your host, John C. Abercrombie. Our primary subject today is going to be Major General Marlete Harris. Major General Marlete Harris. The first general officer in the United States, first black female officer in the United States Air Force. She was born in 1943. So her life and mine parallel in many ways because I was born near that particular time. However, I will have to admit that I didn't know anything about her until fairly recently, which to me is a shame because I should have been aware of her accomplishments. They could have influenced my career because I remember a time when I attempted to join the Air Force. At that time, I had a degree in chemistry, and I was working in the nuclear industry. It was not a matter of avoiding the draft because I was willing to go into the military. I looked at the Air Force, I looked at the Army, I looked at the Navy, I looked at the Marines, and did not find what I was looking for. What I was looking for was the possibility of joining so that I could use the educational benefits. I had a degree in chemistry. I had a BS degree in chemistry. I was working in that area, and I was working in the area of nuclear materials. And so the possibility of being drafted away from that particular job were extremely low. But there is value in knowing our history, knowing what is taking place. We look back into the 1830s, 40s, 50s, and with a character actor by the name of Thomas Rice, we started seeing Jim Crow. Rice was a white actor, a comedian, and he would put burnt cork on his face. The burnt cork made him look as a black person, and he would exaggerate certain features, the purpose of which was to make fun of black people. That in and of itself is not the problem. Much of the problem comes from the fact that there is a dearth of information showing the accomplishments, the abilities, and the humanity of black people. Without that balance, we end up with an imbalance that makes us look less than full citizens. And I want to repeat that. What we are looking at is not one race over another, because when I see people, some people say they don't see color. I see it. I understand that it's there. I have to understand how it impacts me, how I react to it. Other people may react to it. And I try to balance these items out. So what we see as we venture down these particular lines is that without that balance, we look at what we have seen. We have seen for decades, for centuries, people being depicted as buffoons, lacking education, lacking ability, lacking drive, lacking imagination, lacking dreams. There is even a psychological term, you don't hear it very often, but it was recognized by the American Psychiatric Association many, 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 many years ago. And what that is drapetonia. And what it entails is the fact that it was a mental illness on the part of blacks who wanted to be free. This is a very respected organization, but yet and still, they came up with the fact that wanting to be free was a mental disease that affected black people. Now, white people wanted freedom all the time. When we look back at the American Revolutionary War, we see people wanting freedom from England, and they obtained it They obtained this because they went to war. What we don't see and what part of the shifting of the balance is that there were many black people who fought for America. They fought for ideals, principles that other people had that they did not have. They had a mistaken idea that if they showed courage under fire, if they were willing to put their lives on the line, that someday they would be able to have the same benefits. Not only them, but their families, their wives, their children, etc. As it turned out, while that was a great idea, it didn't always turn out that way. And again, it's because of the balance of what we have seen. We had a belief and a common knowledge that what black people in America was doing were enslaved, and they were so happy to be enslaved, which is not a true representation of the facts. Because we have many, many cases, and if you will read AmazingBlackHistory.com, there are over 300 posts, and they're dedicated to showing all sides of this situation. As I started, I was well advanced as an adult, for I began to realize that the information I had been given was false. It was false because there were omissions. Omissions as wide as the horizon is, basically, because it did not include those acts of courage. When we look at the American Revolutionary War, we see the first person to die in that war was Crispus Attucks, described as a mulatto. The common definition of a mulatto is a person of black and European ancestry. We've recently come across situations where people are arguing that that's not the case, that this was a case of Native American and European ancestry. I don't fall on that particular side, but the fact is that we don't discuss it. By the failure to discuss it, we are basically doing a great disservice to a number of people, not only black, but to white, red, yellow, every race of humanity on the face of the earth. And this is because if you don't know and you think that a team member or a person that should be on your team is not doing the job, you don't look at them as you would a person that is doing the job. I think we can get past the color stigma that appears. And don't think it's a one-sided thing. Because of the reactions of many people, there are reactions on both sides. You cannot believe that people are going to be subjected to this type of treatment and not react from it. When we look at the American Civil War, I believe that if you go to AmazingBlackHistory.com, the first 11 or 12 on that were about Americans, black Americans in the American Revolutionary War. They fought in that war. There were people that fought on both sides of that war. And let me explain this. They were called hirelings. And we will talk about that in just a minute. But what these people were people that fought for Britain, because Britain had promised freedom to those people who joined the war on their side and fought. We have people that were more than willing to put their lives on the line for freedom. When we look at some of the females that we have had in history, and I don't want to make it sound like it's a biological term, but we had women. And I cannot remember the lady's name, but she said that given the opportunity, to live 1 minute as a free person, knowing that at the end of that minute that she would die, she would take that opportunity in a heartbeat because she wanted to know what it was like for 1 minute to be free. Does this sound like somebody that's not rational? If it is, you need to examine yourself and others because we want to be free. All of us want to be free. When we look at people like James Armistead, who put his life on the line and played a significant role in the freeing of America from the tyranny of Britain. How did he do this? He was educated. He was in Virginia. And these were the days before the law was passed in Virginia that you could not teach a black to read or write. Now, I'm going to get to Marlete Harris, but it's necessary for some of the background to be exposed because the problem is we have not exposed this background through all of my life, my parents' life, their parents' life. And so we're stuck behind the eight ball. We find, or I have found, that we are in this position, although it involved us. And I see that the same situation exists. We don't have one group that knows and another that does not know. So what the information I'm putting out is for all people, all people. I was well into my 50s before I ever developed an interest in American history. Why? Because black people were excluded from American history. And how did that come about? September 11, 2012, I ventured to a place I had been to once, but never thought I would ever be at the first time. The first time was probably a decade or more before as I rode a motorcycle from Washington State to Los Angeles. And I passed near an area not knowing the significant landmarks and things that I was coming close to. And what I had come close to was Sutter's Mill. On this particular day, as I went to Sutter's Mill, October, fantastic weather. It's a great time to visit museums. There are other times, but the reason this is so significant is the weather is still fantastic. Kids have gone back to school. Now, I don't have any problem with kids visiting museums because I think they should. I think everyone that's there should have an opportunity to do that because it opens your eyes in so many ways. But with a small crowd and me being very shy, introverted, I call myself the most introverted person on the face of the earth. That is until I got something that I wanted to talk about. But I asked the curator, were there any blacks that played a significant role in the events of Sutter's Mill? I saw this shy smile come across his face, and he said yes. He told me about Nancy Monroe Gooch and her family. And if you go to AmazingBlackHistory.com, you'll find one of the early posts was about this very person. It was difficult to find information because it wasn't important. Historians dove her. And what we find is that this family owned hundreds of acres of land in the area around Sutter's Mill. Sutter's Mill came into being in 1848. People started flocking to the area in 1849. Old newspaper accounts say that these black people had one of the finest homes in the entire city. One of the finest homes in the entire city. So they weren't out there picking cotton. What did they do? They were there with hundreds of acres of land, orchards. They were selling fruit wholesale throughout the state of California. I'm left with an impression that all we did was pick fruit. These people were landowners. In fact, at the time of her death, Nancy Monroe Gooch owned the original site of Sutter's Mill. To me, that's important. That started a fervor. I need to know more about this. Since that time, I have been in contact with many of the ancestors, the descendants of, I know a lot of information about how they got there, what they did, and what has taken place since they were there. And it is intriguing to me beyond belief. I communicate with them regularly. CBS had a recent episode within the last few months of one of the family members showing that land. When I asked what happened to the family, I was told that the official position of California, it didn't come across quite that official sounding, but that there were no descendants. And so the state supposedly paid someone for this land. And as we look at some of the information surrounding it, we'll find that that is not necessarily the whole truth. But from that jumping off spot, I began to look at things. Now, Major General Harris was born in 1943, as I indicated before. So while she was making history, and while I was even looking at the military, because with a degree in chemistry, I wanted to go to medical school. I wanted to and was willing to fight in foreign wars for that benefit, alone, plus the fact that I love the country, and I think so many people do. But we don't realize that there are people making sacrifices. Now, when I talk about the Air Force, I'm going to jump back again to an earlier period of time, because one of the best known black aviators or aviatrixes, as we used to call it, because we had to make sure there were separate terms for men and for women, was Bessie Coleman. Bessie Coleman was born in Waxahachie, Texas, I believe, and became the first female to hold an international pilot's license, the first woman in the world to own an international pilot's license. How did this happen? In World War I, her brothers fought for the American ideals and principles. And in doing that, they saw that women in France were treated differently than they were in America, let alone the racial differences. We sometimes think that France, England, all these countries were completely devoid of blacks, but there were blacks there. We've had them everywhere else. We've had them in France. We've had them in Russia. We've had them all over the world, but we don't talk about that. When we look, and they came back and said, women can do this in France. And one of the things they said was, women can fly airplanes in France. Ah, okay, I will do the same. This shows the power of a role model. We see somebody do it and say, I can do it too. Well, why doesn't this work all around? Because we have put such a stigma on the color of a person's skin that it does make a difference. There are many people that have influenced us, many. But it would be so much better if all people were able to contribute. We talk about America being melting pot. The recent adaptations of that is we are a salad. We're combined together, but we still maintain some of our identity. So we see, how does a black woman from Texas train to be a pilot? Oh, you just go to the airport and take lessons. Not so quick, cowboy. That's not America as it existed in that time. That's not how it was. Women had difficulty getting training. A black had difficulty getting training. Imagine what it's like to be black and female and try to get training. Determined that she was going to fly, she had to go to France. She had to learn French, and she studied in France. And I think she came back to America and then went back to France and did the same thing. She held licenses. She was a stunt pilot, one of the best-known stunt pilots in America, a black female, because she persisted. It wasn't because of some super talent that she had. It was the determination plus the talent that she had. Why didn't we have black pilots in World War I? Because America insisted that black people didn't have the intelligence to fly planes. They insisted that we did not have the intelligence. We couldn't look at a dial and find out that what a plane was doing, whether it was nose up, nose down, turning left, right, roll, yaw, what have you. But they were wrong, and they were wrong because history did not talk about Eugene Boulard. Born in Georgia, in the United States of America, he ran away from home at an early age because the Ku Klux had threatened his father to kill him. And he ran to Norfolk, Virginia. And I think he was in his early teens or late tweens at that time. His father and family members had told him about France, that racism was not as prevalent in France. They didn't say it was none over there, but it was so much better compared to here that he went to Norfolk, stowed away on a ship, not knowing where that ship was going. Under sail, that he was discovered. It was a German ship. In the 3 months it took to cross the Atlantic Ocean, he learned German. Is this a retard? No. And I don't mean any disrespect to anybody by that. But it shows the capability, the intelligence, the intellect that is present that had been covered up by buffoonery, by people thinking that everything they had seen was all there was. So while Thomas Rice was cutting the fool, he was degrading an entire race of people, an entire race of people. I'm not going back to this point, but we find that civilization existed on a grand scale in Africa, grand scale. But again, we omit many pertinent facts in our history. When Eugene Boulard got to Germany, his goal was to get to France. He worked himself down to England and from England to France. He joined the French Foreign Legion and fought for the same principles that the Americans were fighting for. As such, he was injured twice. The second time so badly, he could not return to the infantry. He said, make me a pilot. And I'm not going to tell you he didn't face racism in France, because he did. But he overcame it. He became a pilot, known as the Black Swallow of Death, swallow like the small bird that flits around. He has confirmed kills on enemy planes in World War I. Meanwhile, in America, we're saying black people can't do that. Black people are incapable. While it was happening, this was before Marcellite Harris, but many of the soldiers that did fight in World War I came home expecting to find benefits of citizenship, jobs, whatever. But the resistance of many of the white citizens in America said, no, you cannot have jobs. You cannot have equality, social or any other way, economically or any other way. And this became known as the Red Summer. So much blood was shed that that's what it became known as. So we go back to Marcellite Harris, a woman. Not just any woman. She graduated from Spelman, S-P-E-L-M-A-N. Don't do like I did and try to put it with two L's, S-P-E-L-L-M-A-N. No, it's S-P-E-L-M-A-N, well-respected black institution in the Atlanta area. We have HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities, and why? Because white institutions did not welcome us. Very few would even accept, and if they did, they had a strict limit on the number that were allowed in. It was almost an elitist organization in and of itself. So we have this situation. Marcellite Harris had a Bachelor of Arts from this prestigious school. She also later earned a degree, a Bachelor of Science degree, and I'm trying to look over my notes real good, from I'm not seeing it. I don't want to belabor this point. But let me talk about some of her accomplishments, because she did get a Bachelor of Science degree. She was the first female aircraft maintenance officer. Now, when we look back at the time of Bessie Coleman, we look back at, again, I'm coming up with a block on names, but her last name was Brown. And she was the first female to hold both a pilot's license and a mechanic's license. So we're not just a pretty face. We can do many different things. Willa Brown was her name, the first female of any race in America to be both a licensed pilot and a licensed mechanic. Now, why are you going to withhold this information? So we see Harris as the first female aircraft maintenance officer. She was one of two Air Force officers commanding the Air Force Academy, the first female director of maintenance. And she was a White House aide, social aide, during the Carter administration. These are just some as we start. So we're talking about a very talented person. To me, part of her distinction is the fact that she should have been serving as a role model. If she was serving as a role model, do you think it would only be beneficial to black students? No, to all. To all. Yes, it would have inspired many who did not see them in such roles because there was so much difficulty being faced by people. When I looked at only talking about those people that excelled. So much was lost because of what people had to overcome in order to achieve. In order to achieve. So it's not the height to which people rise, it's the depth from which they arose. America, which prides itself, has turned out to be a great hypocrite. In the military, she won the Bronze Star. She had a presidential unit citation and a Vietnam Service Medal. All of these, black female. I was not aware of this. In fact, I wasn't aware of many black people. I knew we'd fought in the war. I didn't have any idea of rank, the different MOSs, or anything else of significance. I just knew they were there. I didn't have that interest because I did not see myself. I did not see us in those positions. And she got the rank of Major General in 1997 and was the highest-ranking female officer in the Air Force and the nation. And the black woman, and the highest-ranking black woman in the Department of Defense. Is there any logical reason you can think of that she is not mentioned in our history? I want you to think hard. Why? With those types of accomplishments, it should be all over, especially in our community. But it's not. Not only that, but it could inspire white women. I have nothing against white people. In fact, there are many white people that I feel sorry for. And let me explain that to you. Because we don't talk about race, we overlook many, many people. We passed laws in America that said, if a person escapes slavery, and this is the slave law of 1850, I may not believe in slavery, but it's a crime if I don't help you catch your slave and return them back to slavery. We have a belief that everybody in the South was pro-slavery. It was not. There were people in the South that did not believe in slavery, white people that did not believe in slavery. We have white people in the North that did. We make it look as if it's a homogeneous group with one band running across the southern part of the United States and something different across the North. But many people expose themselves to many dangers helping people escape this sin of slavery. Many people did. I don't care if you're white and your ancestors owned slaves. I can't hold you responsible for something that happened before you got here. Now, many of you are intimidated to even speak up about the subject because you've been taught that way by your parents who didn't know any better, because they were taught by their parents who didn't know any better. And so here's what happens. This inspiring figure, Dr. Marcellite, or not Dr., but Major General Marcellite Harris, who we see is well-rounded, well-accomplished, in the military, is unknown to this day. What we try to do here is to reveal those facts to you. And the reason we reveal them to you is so that we can have a true factual understanding of history. Because we have left so many people out, we're left with Thomas Rice's buffoonery around black people. Do I hold Thomas Rice responsible? No, because that's what sold. He was basically a businessman entertaining people. What I do hold people responsible for doing that time is the fact that there was no balance, no balance to what was being presented. I do hold some people responsible today because they have not filled in those significant areas of our history. They have not, to a large extent, made this possible. But let me also apologize to those people that may be offended, because we have sources of information. It's just that the general public is not made aware of them. We have authors who need to do research. Again, I can't hold all of them responsible because many of them don't know it exists. Many of them are writing about things of interest to them, and I can understand that. But by and large, as a conglomerate, I think we've done a very poor job of revealing our history. The good, the bad, and yes, the ugly. Because so many people today are wondering why blacks have not advanced further. Because they said they had the same opportunities that we had. What do you mean, had the same opportunities as you had? When I looked at people like Barney Lancelot Ford, and if you want to know who Barney Lancelot Ford is, one way is to look at AmazingBlackHistory.com. There is a searchable title. This man was a successful businessman. In fact, he built a building in downtown Denver that still stands today. You can go by and look at it. But what happened is he was a gold prospector. A gold prospector. Oh, yeah, man, you can strike it rich. What did he find out after he found gold? He found that black people could not file claims for gold. Black people could not file claims for gold. He found an attorney he thought he could trust. Said, here's what I'll do. I'll give you 20% of all the gold mined out of this mine. Put it in your name. And that's all you have to do. 20% of all the gold is yours. Ruthless. Unethical. He filed it in his name and then filed papers to have him evicted from the property. Evicted from the property. How in the world is that fair? Large swaths of land given to white immigrants to this country. Large swaths were given to white immigrants in this country. When we had the end of the Civil War, small swaths, 40 acres, that's not totally small, but were promised to the black people that had worked that land. You think that we came over here with no skills, nothing. I am a native of South Carolina. Never knew this until fairly recently. One of the big cash crops in South Carolina was rice. How did it get here and who produced it? They went to specific regions of Africa where rice was being grown, brought rice back, brought people who understood how to grow it, and this was part of the economic engine that takes place that made America great. They went to Sierra Leone and other places, capturing people with the specific intent of bringing them back and raising rice. These white people weren't going to do the labor. We find that when we look statistically, less than 6% of the white people in America owned slaves ever. 6%. Of those that got filthy rich, it was less than 2%. And they played this game with poor white people. Yes, there were poor white people. And they said, I would give you a job, except they didn't say the particular word, but I got somebody that can do it free, and I don't have to pay them. All I have to do is give them the worst of the food, the worst of the housing, the worst of the clothing, and they make me rich. You would think that when the Civil War broke out, these people would have the most to learn to lose. What they did is they passed a law, and I'm going to clean this up. It was called the 20 Negro Rule. Imagine what could have gone in there. Starts with an N that said that for every 20 slaves you owned, you could exempt one of your sons. As if that wasn't bad enough, by the end of the war, for every 15 slaves you had, you could exempt one of your sons. These are the people that had the most to lose. What did they do? They got the poor white people to fight. Poor white people fought. Now, we sometimes think that black people didn't have slaves. We find that that's not true. The reason for having them was completely different. How can it be different? If you were a slave, ran away, you could be re-enslaved. But if you owned that person, they were returned to you. Ah, this is how I can keep my wife free. Your wife? Yes. Because if she were a slave owned by a white man, even if you had children with her, they were not yours. They belonged to the white owner of the woman. Now we look at this period of time when Marcellite Harris is coming along. It was a period of time when things were much different. They were changing, but they were changing in such a way that hang on a second. Okay. I'll talk about something else for a minute. But so what we have are people making progress. And as we see, she entered the military and did quite well. Very well. Should be well known. But she is not. And we find that this is devastating to many people because of that fact, because of the fact that we don't know about it. Didn't mean that it did not happen. But here we go back, and I'm going to look at my notes again, that what we see is after retirement, she didn't just sit in the corner and waste away. She served as the Air Force NASA representative, Florida site director, and logistics process owner of the United States Space Alliance, the company managing the nation's shuttle program. Wouldn't you think that's outstanding, that that's amazing, that that's something noteworthy? It almost appears as if we deliberately don't talk about these things, deliberately not talk about them. Don't you think that it would benefit other people to know? If that person can do it, I certainly can. Whatever the reasoning, we all benefit from this knowledge. when we have people that are willing to put their lives on the line, fighting for other people to have freedoms that we don't have in America. Let's go back to Bessie Coleman. When her brothers came back in 1919 and in that period, it was known as the Red Summer because they came back expecting that they could get jobs. Many of the jobs were open and available because white men were fighting. And when they tried to get jobs, it broke out into riots. Riots over the fact that somebody else wanted a job. But when you find that one group does well, all groups can do well. All. It's not a zero-sum game. Because when we have people that, let's say, can buy cars, what's the next thing that we need? We need people that can service them, that can repair them, that can do whatever. One better than the other? No, not necessarily. But skill jobs are in more demand. I used to be amazed watching some of the mechanics in my neighborhood fix cars, do innovative things because they didn't have the money they could spend always on replacing something. They had to, and many times, fix it. But they were capable. They knew what they were doing. Are these people that you want to toss aside? I don't think so. I don't think so. Because I think it builds in all people. So we see that she was working there. Now here it is, besides her BA, she holds a Bachelor of Science in Business Management from the University of Maryland. The University of Maryland. She has a Bachelor of Science in Business Management. In 1999, she was awarded an honorary doctorate degree from Spelman College, where she first started. So, yes, she was a doctor, and they recognized the work that she had done, and she was awarded a doctorate degree. Somebody, something there that means that she should not be acknowledged? I wish that we were in a room and I could ask all of you that knew about this prior to raise your hand. And we could all look around and see how many people were aware of this amazing woman. Now, let me give you a number because it won't be long before we open the microphone. As many of you are listening, and most of you are listening this way, and I love you for it, because the goal here is to get information out, information that we should have learned in school, information that we should have learned every day in our lives, because we see so much information being pushed out, but it's as if they are excluding with a purpose the accomplishments of a significant group of people. Among her other accomplishments, she was a treasurer of the Atlanta branch of the NAACP. I mention this because I think it's very, very worthy. We cannot sit back and rest on our laurels. We need to be involved in those people that are doing things necessary to make progress. And that's exactly what we see. We see a person connected with the community. That connection, I believe, is essential. When I have somebody that has absolutely no idea what's going on down here where I am and where some of you may be, we have a disconnected society and it does not work. It is maximum efficiency. So we see a person that is involved in the community. She has achieved, but she is not sitting there resting on her laurels. She is helping other people. And part of my broadcast is to help you parents understand what you are capable of doing in some cases, to even have you look at your ancestors and see what they have done and how you may be disappointing them by not maximizing what you can do. But equally or more important is I want you to understand so that you can pass on the good to the children. This is not just children, the white children. We are now having people that don't want people of color to know anything about their past. Imagine somebody telling you to teach the 1921 race massacre of Tulsa and not mention race. They didn't kill a bunch of white people. They killed a bunch of black people over nothing. The person that started it was not even charged, but the powder keg was lit because of racial friction. 300-plus people killed, thousands left homeless, and you're going to describe this and not use race? That's why we're in the mess that we're in now. That's why. Because we have not talked about it. I don't want little Johnny to know the truth because he might not feel comfortable about it. I'm telling you that if he understood, he or she understood, not going to make it necessarily remain status quo. We are going to be in a situation where all we do is kick a significant problem down the road and dump it on our children. And it doesn't have to be there because it can start now. Is it going to be uncomfortable? Yes, it's going to be uncomfortable. When I first learned that we did more than pick cotton in the South, I was so embarrassed I could have just melted into the ground. You mean all these years I've been lied to? I've been lied to? I look at people like Marcellite Harris. I could take pride in her. I'm a male. But I could say, hey, there is opportunity over there. If she can do it, I can do it. If I can do it, you can do it. A rising tide floats all boats. When we have people, let me tell you what makes people great. Because we are problem solvers. We see problems, we make it better. We see problems, we make it better. We're able to raise millions of tons more food than we can consume. We throw so much of it away. Somebody is going to figure out ways of using it, utilizing it. And that's going to inspire more people to do more. Right now, we are polluting our planet to the point where forever chemicals are in our water. And what do I mean by forever chemicals? These are chemicals that don't break down easily. Now, Marcellite Harris was director on the board of Peachtree Hope Charter School. Again, we see somebody that leaves a lofty perch, but continues to work. Is there anything in that model that you wouldn't want one of your children to do? Anything? Well, some white people are saying, I wouldn't want them to be black. Well, yeah, okay. We can get over that. She was appointed by President Barack Obama to serve as a member of the board of visitors for the United States Military Academy. Now, let me tell you what they did. The board inquires into morale, discipline, curriculum, instruction, physical equipment, financial affairs, academic methods, and other things that may be included. This is something that needs to be. We have to look and we have to be inclusive. We have to be inclusive. This is a person that most of us would be proud to have as a daughter. I haven't seen anything yet. And I'll give you a number. You can call and talk to me about this. We can talk about it on the air. People will benefit from it. And that number is 646-668-8217. 646-668-8217. Many people are listening. I know that because I see the statistics of what is taking place. But as you are listening, I can't see you on my dashboard. I can't open your microphone and allow us to communicate and other people to hear our conversation. Some people may disagree with me. I understand that. It's not as pleasant as when people agree with you. But we have to, at some point, face those challenges. Little Johnny is going to end up with a lap full of problems because we are afraid or ashamed to answer those questions today. Because we have not opened the opportunities. We have not opened the gate. We have not looked at it objectively. We have not looked at it maturely. We have looked at it only from the standpoint of how do I get out of it today? How do I get out of it today? We're not in something that we necessarily want to get out of. We want to get maximum benefit, and that comes from differences. When I'm on a committee, for example, if all of us see everything identical, then most of us aren't needed. Many businesses start during poor economic times. What they do is they look at it from multiple angles, multiple disciplines, multiple ethnicities, multiple genders, and they come up with something that is superior to anything that a single group could come up with. This is what makes America great. This is what makes us outstanding. And in order to maintain what we consider to be our lead, we must maximize our benefit from it. We must maximize the benefit that we get from the people in this country. As we talk about the amazing accomplishments of Major General Harris, what would this country be without Charles Drew? Charles Drew? Who in the heck is he? He's the guy that developed the blood bank, and we're still using it today. He was working with the American Red Cross, and they came to a disagreement because the American Red Cross wanted to have separate blood banks for everybody. We don't have separate blood banks, but it's working perfectly fine. They were not needed. What would America be like without Daniel Hale Williams? Daniel Hale Williams? Who is he? An American physician and surgeon, the first to work on a beating human heart successfully. Had a patient come to him or come to the hospital, had been stabbed in the heart. Heart was still beating. He performed surgery. That person lived for decades later. He is also responsible for the development of Provident Hospital. And what's so significant about Provident Hospital? It is the first hospital set up to train black nurses. Many people have died, and I know many of you will find this extremely hard to believe, but I've seen it in my lifetime. people with severe injury, illness, rushed to the hospital and refused treatment because of the color of their skin. Some weren't even picked up by ambulances. I've told this story many times. And that is of a hero of mine. And he was a race car driver, Wendell Scott, first black NASCAR racer. Had his first race here in Spartanburg, South Carolina, my hometown. And yet I didn't learn about it until much, much later. Invited by the family to an award ceremony, and at that time he was the only black in the NASCAR Hall of Fame located in Charlotte, North Carolina. Richard wanted to race in a race in Florida, paid his money, was accepted until he got there. "Oh, we didn't know you're black. You can't race." "Why?" "Because you don't have an ambulance here. You got an ambulance parked right over there. That's a white ambulance." Wendell Scott goes out. In those days, most funeral homes had ambulances, and got one brought back to the race. Unfortunately, during the race, there was an accident. They had to transport a white racer to the hospital. Guess what? They couldn't get the white ambulance to start. "Oh, my God, what's going to happen? The man's going to die right here." They used the black ambulance to take him to the hospital. They get ready to restart the race. "Wendell, you can't race." "Why?" "Because your ambulance is not here." Now, how much sense does that make? It shows that racism is baked into our history, and we need to take it out. We do that by recognizing the accomplishments of great people, such as Major General Harris. Now, when you get to Amazing Black History, I'm not satisfied with giving you a couple of paragraphs, a couple of sentences on that person, because my goal, the intent of the program, the website, is to let you know what we have done to motivate and inspire you to do it and more, to inspire and motivate others to do likewise. Is there a downside to that? If it is, let me know what it is. Let me know what it is. I still think back to the time that I almost cried learning about Clara Brown. Clara Brown, a Denver resident who built three churches that still stand today. The state of Colorado had to change their law in order to recognize her as a pioneer. Why? Because the law did not allow the recognition of anybody. But she's affectionately known as Aunt Clara to any and everyone who knew her, because she opened her home as a hospital. She opened her home as a Bible study location. She was benevolent, but she had to walk from St. Louis to Denver, not because she didn't have the money to buy a stagecoach ticket. She did. But they refused to sell her one because of the color of their skin, of her skin. How inspiring was that, to walk all that distance? And the only way she was able to do that is to be taken on as the cook, which meant she had to get up early, have breakfast ready for when people got up, do the dishes after dinner, cooking all meals, and had to walk because she didn't own a wagon. Clara Brown was benevolent. She went back to her original home, paid for moving expenses for everybody that wanted to go to Denver to be free? Is that selfish? No. Is that the type of person you think that America should honor? I don't know about you, but I do. Why then don't I know about her? I had to stand in the Capitol in Denver, Colorado, to find this out. Not that long ago. These are things that can inspire, that can show that we're just not here as ignorant people to pick cotton, that we haven't done anything. The value of the slaves in the South was worth more than all of the factories and railroads in the North. And yet and still, we want to take advantage of people. We want to take advantage of them in every way that we can. I don't think it's right. Now, again, that number is 646-668-8217. Your chances of getting in are very good. I see that my friend Marshall James is on, and we're going to open that microphone very shortly so that he can make any comments. Those of you that are familiar, have listened, have heard Marshall, and I admire Marshall and his brother greatly, because I suspect that they're probably in their 80s, but they're active. They don't just talk. They do. They have been a singing group for over 75 years. They have a program, I believe, that's coming up. They have opened for such figures as Sam Cooke and others when they appeared in Spartanburg. They are there. They have won recognition from the state of South Carolina. They continue to be active every day. And I like that. I like people that don't just talk about it. They do. And those are people that do. They're working on a project to clean a cemetery. And we have disrespected people to immense degrees. Many people are aware, because we finally had a movie that showed blacks in a positive light when we talked about glory. And the Massachusetts 54th, in their fight at Fort Sumter, they're not the only ones. And when we talk about the Massachusetts 54th, that doesn't mean that everybody was from Massachusetts. I think that 36 colored troops from the Outer Banks of North Carolina, and people went to areas where they could join. And so we probably have people from South Carolina, North Carolina, and every nearby state that fought with these units. But we have the Massachusetts 55th. Who are they? I didn't know about the 54th, let alone the 55th. Black people were so willing to fight for freedom, to fight for equality. And yet and still, when these men in the 55th died, there's a mass grave in South Carolina. It dug a giant hole and dumped them all in it. They didn't bury them, they dumped them. And so we have to look at this. We've been completely disrespectful to people that fought for rights of people that had rights that we didn't even have. So I'm always amazed at the stories that show. Marceline Harris didn't just do for her, she did for all. She did so that my daughter would have opportunities, so that your daughter could have opportunities, so that your grandchildren could have opportunities. This, my friends, is what makes America great. We see that time in, time. Well, we don't see it. And the reason we don't see it is because we've never been exposed to it. I want somebody to tell me what's the downside of exposing this information. How many of you knew about Major General Harris? Some of you in the military didn't even know about her. Some of you in the Air Force didn't even know about her. And that's a shame, in my opinion. It is a shame. I may have been more persistent in getting into the military had I seen the examples of what's here. If I had seen the examples of General Benjamin O. Davis and Benjamin O. Davis Jr., imagine going to college for 4 years and nobody speaking to you except in class or about a class assignment. Could you have stood up to the rigors? Everybody else was talking. Everybody else got along. But because of the color of his skin, the sacrifice was tremendous. Shouldn't be. I don't want that to happen. My son graduated from West Point, and I visited him at several military installations, not knowing that they were named in honor of Confederate generals who fought the United States of America to make sure that my grandfather never took a free breath of air in his entire life. Slap in the face. An absolute slap in the face. I've been to Colorado Springs. I've seen the Air Force Academy. I was there in 1960. I don't know if it was opened in 1960, but it was being built. It existed at that point. But I didn't realize that there were opportunities there for me. There were opportunities there for me to contribute to my country. But I was not offered. I didn't know. We're finding now that it's becoming more and more difficult to recruit people into our all volunteer army, our volunteer military. But we see that given the right set of circumstances, and I honor Major General Monique Harris. With that, I will open the microphones. I've got my friend Marshall James on the line. I think, Marshall, you've been here since early on this broadcast. Is that right?
Yes, sir, Mr. Abercrombie. I've had the opportunity to tune in early to listen to you today. You're doing a wonderful job. God bless you and what you're doing. We've been here and there and everywhere. Next time we'll be in Greenville with Buncombe Street United Methodist and probably miss you again, but certainly want to listen to you every chance I get. We all should be listening, but we know how that is. If they didn't get the message this week with what the Supreme Court got, I don't know what it's going to take to give us a message. I'm not sure what it takes.
Yeah.
There was something that just nearly knocked me out of my shoes, I'm telling you. That's rough. All of
not be aware and let people know. I tried to speak quarterly at the Spartanburg Public Library. We're working on a date and a topic, and yeah, when we find that out, I'll let you know. Because there's so much information that we need to know. Go ahead.
Yes, certainly is. And we appreciate it. You do that too. Let us know. And one other thing you were talking about, Wendell Stott. We also have another black race car driver here in Welford, which died at the Greenville Pickens Speedway. His car caught on fire. Was Carroll Williams. Now, he was just about to make it. He was at the Greenville Pickens Speedway when his car caught fire, and I'm not sure exactly how that happened. I don't want to say it because I may say it wrong, but that's where he died from the fire, and I don't know if the car, he was in it, had an accident on the track, how that happened, but Carol Williams, and narration went on in his family, and we're going to be talking one day next week or the week after one. We're going to talk about the good old days, and his cousin is still alive, and he remembers it well. I remember it, but his cousin remembers it real well. And I was thinking, like, give you opportunity to come and sit with us. We're going to go eat breakfast one morning. We all can come and talk on that level.
Okay, now when and where?
I don't know yet. We haven't decided, but it will be one day next week, this week coming up or next week. And I'll call you and let you know.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, go somewhere and have breakfast.
that'd be wonderful. You know, looking at me, you know I always enjoy eating.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to tell you something else that Marshall does that I really appreciate. When we're flipping through the dial and we find something of interest to the other, we pass it on. And that's what we need to do as a community. And it's not just black people or white people. It's people that are interested in people and what happens and what we have been denied. And that program you talked to me about the other day, I got it and recorded the rest of it. So, it's always great.
Right, yes. I always look and be listening for things of importance that would be important, especially to our race, because there are things that comes up and we just need to take heed to really what's going on, like the opening up of the new museum in Charleston. And there's who is Minister there in Spartanburg getting it going, and they're going to leave on the 8th. Or the 12th one of August, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay. One of the people responsible for the opening of that museum is related to you through Jay
Massey. Miss Jay Massey, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Michael Polware. Brown, I believe, is his last name.
Okay.
Michael Moore. And it's a fantastic opportunity to see history up close and personal, because a significant number of all the slaves that came to America came through that harbor at Charleston, where the museum is located.
That's right, Charleston, South Carolina. That's right. And we're also working on the Florence Chapel alumni. Now, I think I know on the 17th of this month, we'll be meeting at the New Trinity Fellowship Hall. We will be organizing our alumni, Mr. Thurman Norris out of Greenville, which is a part of the alumni for Sterling High School. He's going to be there. Greg McKeith is going to be there. And one of our good Muslim friends, Steve Mohammed, he's going to be there to do the nomination of the officers for us on the 17th out at New Trinity at 5 o'clock on the 17th of this month. So that's one thing we're excited about. We can get our alumni started so we can get going with some work that we need to be doing with our playground and our center for Florence Chapel High School.
Now, New Trinity is in which of the cities?
In Welford.
Okay. Those of you that are listening, some of you, I'm sure, have attended Florence Chapel. I went to church with Dave Cureton back in the day, who was the principal of Florence Chapel. Very well-known, well-respected school in the area. And when we can continue our alumni association, sometimes this is one of the few ties that we have back to the past. We have people that are still living, that have lived history. They've seen it, and they can point us in the direction that we need to go. If you are able to attend on the 17th, 5 o'clock, New Trinity in Welford, please do so.
Yes, sir. And also Greg McKeith, he's going to be there, too. He's our historian. He's going to tell us more about Franz Zappa than we ever known. And we went to school there, and all he done was he's a historian. All that's what he do is dig up stuff and look up things and tell you about things you really didn't even know.
Yes, yeah. Sir. He's talked to us about Brush Arbor churches.
And oh, yes. Yes.
There's a black minister that started, I don't know, 40 churches in North and South Carolina. And
yes,
the humble beginnings.
Yes.
He's done a lot of research in that area. So come out, just even if it's just to meet him.
Yes.
So the family doing well?
Yes, sir. Everybody's doing well. Leon's wife, she had to go get, I think, the heart monitor put in. Is that what they call it? Put in, and she had to spend one night in the hospital. But she's home doing fine, though. Everybody doing okay. We just
all right.
We're
always sending prayers to the family.
Thank you.
And Leon
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to come up with your name. I'm getting old and about to forget.
Marcia.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, this week past we was called from the Chamber of Commerce in Greer. Black History Month in October, and they want us to talk and tell them in Greer the history from a black perspective.
Okay.
At one time, Greer had a bus that run in the 40s, like 47, 40 something like that, a bus that ran and picked up people from Taylor's to Reba Road down to 90, that picked up people and carried them to the mill to go to work. Lima Mill, Grill Mill, and other mills. That's what the bus did. And we were able to catch that bus one day. There's some of the stuff we're going to talk about when we have a chance to meet. We have a chance to meet one day for breakfast. We'll let you know.
If that's in October?
We're going to, the meeting that Greg held on their history concerning this city, they want us to tell it from a black perspective what Greg was like to us when they had Punder's Ice Cream and the Ford place was uptown on the corner and all this good stuff back in the day. But what we're really going to talk about is just about the good old days, which we're going to let you know when we go for breakfast.
Okay. Well,
yes.
I know you keep me informed on stuff, and I appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
So,
yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
And I'm always thankful for you and the other listeners that we have, because that's the way that we get this information out, that is so valuable to our community. And we see that there are real people involved working every day. Such as Marshall. And like I said, Marshall doesn't just talk about it. He does it. Now, we've got about 5 minutes, and if nobody else calls in, we're going to close this off. I appreciate everybody that is on listening to us. And I know that there are many others that are listening to us that did not call in. Hopefully that's because you're getting the information, understanding the information, don't have questions. But we are here every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and whatever that translates out into in your part of the world. Join us and contribute to us, ask questions, express disagreements or whatever. We can disagree, but we don't have to be disagreeable. I want to bless each and every one of you, and my prayers are always with my friends, Marshall, and others who are not necessarily on the phone with us, but we do that. We do that in the name of progress. We do that in the name of Jesus, because I believe that Jesus has put us on this faith, on the face of this earth, to do a mission, and that is to become the best that we can and to encourage others to do the same. My friends, it's always a pleasure, and be blessed until next week. And if you're interested in looking at that, at the other post, and I hope that you are, AmazingBlackHistory.com. Be blessed, my friends. Be blessed.
Be blessed. Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Thank you.